Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we're going to be talking about the astrology from December 28th, 2014 through January 10th, 2015. So this is our first podcast of the new year, and as such, we are going to be doing our Astrology 360 on 2015. The year in preview.
The year in preview. Sounds good.
Indeed. So we're going to start with a couple of planetary transits and ingresses that are happening over the next 2 weeks. And also we're going to talk about the moon phases.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. So the first big aspect that we have going on is happening January 1st. And that is Mars opposite Jupiter. So that's going to be on the Leo Aquarius axis around 21 degrees. Or at, rather, not around. And I'm calling this the ego versus community aspect.
Uh-huh.
And many other things. But that's sort of the collective versus the, what is that? The ego versus the...
Self.
Superego. That's it. Ego versus superego.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want to be all Freudian right. About it.
Okay.
Yeah, get Freud right out of the way, right at the top of the podcast. okay, so January 2nd, we've got Venus moving into Aquarius.
Yes.
So that's the cooler heads prevail aspect, I think, or
sounds good.
Transit.
Yeah.
So in relationships and finances, it coincides with the end of the holidays. So possibly a sort of coming down from the high of, you know, family visiting and buying stuff and giving and receiving and all that stuff. Also on the second, we've got the Sun square Uranus, which triggers the ongoing Uranus Pluto square. And so the very next day, we also have the Sun conjunct Pluto. I think this could bring more revolutionary sort of unrest, more of the types of conflicts we've been seeing between citizens and governments, citizens and police.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I don't know if anything on that particular day is you know, destined to happen, but the ongoing stuff that we've seen, I think will definitely be in the news that week as well. And maybe in a more personal way and sort of more sun-oriented way.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe some major, you know, political figures or celebrities will sort of throw their opinion in and
that's right, because the Sun's going to be conjunct Pluto and actually squaring Uranus.
Yep.
So that's really quite a powerful position. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And the very next day we have Mercury going into Aquarius. So this is another of the cooler heads sort of prevailing transits. The bubble of holiday communications will expand to include the community, the world. So we'll hear probably a bit more from, again, probably from the communities and the people that are protesting. I think we'll be hearing a lot that week.
Mercury often shows what's going to come up in the headlines, you know, as well. So
exactly.
Yeah. And it's slim, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yep. Two ingresses and three aspects.
In 2 whole weeks.
So in a way, it's like the new year starting off a little slowly.
Yeah.
Before it picks up a bit of momentum.
Yeah. I mean, the end of December hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been too boring. So I think that we'll still be dealing with a lot, especially in the media. I think that a lot of things are even coming out now about stuff that happened a couple weeks ago.
Right.
When the last Uranus-Pluto square occurred, the mm-hmm. exact that happened over the December 14th. And just that same, you know, that very weekend, we had the awful, in Pakistan, the gunmen who broke into the school, and I mean, they killed like 140 people, mm-hmm. most of them children, just awful. And that same weekend was the Sydney coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a 16-hour standoff, and that ended up resulting in two of the hostages being killed, and the gunmen, of course. But it's now coming out that there was also another Boko Haram kidnapping that was like 200, unbelievable. Yeah, 200 people kidnapped and something like 30 or 40 killed just in this one raid alone, which happened that exact weekend. Same thing. So I think that we are going to be hearing about a lot of those things still.
Still coming out forward in the news.
And
yes.
Possibly details. Maybe some more personal stories, people coming forward and telling their side of things. And exactly. So that is the beginning of the
transits. Transit. We don't have much this year, but it's starting off the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. So what's the moon doing?
Okay, well, as I say every time, the moon is always moving. And on January the 4th, we've got the full moon in Cancer. And so that should be great.
Mm.
And it's also then be coinciding, and it'll be opposing the Sun conjunct Pluto. It'll be squaring the Uranus. Mm. So that will pick up quite a strong T-square if anyone's born on around that day, 3rd, 4th, 5th of January next year,
yeah.
or 2015, I should say.
Yeah.
And then we on the January the 13th, we've got the last quarter moon. Mm-hmm. So the moon is in our period, going from full down to less, so the light's diminishing. So that indicates it's a time for finishing things off, and not starting them.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are the two moon phases we actually have in the period we're talking about this time. So, yeah.
All right.
But the full moon in Cancer should be pretty good because it's in its own sign.
Yeah.
So it's very powerful full moon and, yeah.
Yeah, I know tons of people with moon in Cancer.
Do you?
More than any other sign. Yeah, by really? Far. Yeah, it's weird. It's actually eerie how many people I know. Moon in Cancer. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So our Astrology 360 today is about 2015. It's the 2015 yes. preview. But first, let's talk a bit about the 2014 year in review.
Like, yes, astrologically the year in review.
Exactly.
Went down.
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning of the year, we, I remember we approached it with trepidation as far as our predictions, because it just looked like it was going to be a shit show. No other way to say it. It just looked like it was, you know, just full of awful, mm-hmm. tense aspects and strife and fires and brimstone and what do you know, that's kind of what happened.
Yeah,
we saw new groups of terrorists and troublemakers coming out of nowhere, seemingly. We've now got ISIS, we've got Boko Haram, we've got the resurgence of Ebola, polio coming out of the woodwork. We've yes. got the Russian Crimean whole fiasco happening with protests in the streets, killing hundreds of people, firing, you know, on airliners that are passing by. Two entire airliners missing spring, which took up the news for as long as they could possibly, until other stories overtook in the spring. What else? I mean, Hong Kong.
Rioting then?
Huge amounts, huge mm-hmm. protests. And this is actually kind of a good thing, because, you know, we've heard that there's a new generation of kids growing up that have never heard of the Tiananmen Square massacre, that they've completely managed to cover that up, and they do Google searches in China and they can't even find the pictures that they're so iconic and so yes. embedded in our memory. But apparently that's, you know, maybe not so true. But yes, I mean, Kiev, Ferguson, Missouri, Hong Kong, all these places, huge unrest, huge protests, huge sort of civil clashes between forces and citizens, and Ebola.
So what are we going to attribute these things to?
Well, I mean, the Uranus-Pluto square is the revolutionary exactly. aspect.
Exactly.
Since 2012, all of these things that have happened.
And the suppression of the internet and things like that.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's, I know. Absolutely.
So we had several squares during 2014, and the sixth one was in December.
Yeah.
And there's just one more coming up in 2015.
Yep, in March.
And then it will have passed. This Uranus square Pluto that we'd all been living under will have actually passed and will never to return in our
actually,
lifetimes.
There's one in November. It's weird because it goes within a degree of being exact, but doesn't actually
make
a mark.
Exact.
But it is for about two, at least 2 weeks, if not three, it's within a degree of exact. So I'm going to call that close to a hit. I mean, it really within a degree, we're going to count it in the history books. So I think that November, end of November next year is definitely time to watch as well.
But the point is that of the seven, yeah. they're all six then, are behind us and brought to the surface.
Yeah.
That's been going on with all this business, the CIA and what yeah. they've been up to and this
NSA
and that. And yeah.
And
so
it's
coming to an end that we are getting used to things being brought forward, and we are expecting more transparency with what's happening.
Definitely. I think we can actually kind of look back with a little bit of positivity now, having gone through all of these things and seeing how quickly the sort of the real story comes out when something is leaked or when something kind of hits the news and it looks a certain way. And then almost immediately you see the other side coming forward. And more often than not, Twitter is the carrier of this alternate story.
Right.
And it's fascinating. I mean, no sooner did we have the verdict in Ferguson and all of those protests that happened in November. But then in New York, we had all these protests, and then the Eric Garner case in New York, which is just awful, mm-hmm. and all those protests. And then just, you know, case after case coming forward. And I think if anything good can come of it, I think it actually is finally coming to a point where we can say, well, at least we are more aware now that this is still a problem.
Yes.
I mean, it was so weird just sitting in the movie theater and watching this preview for this movie that's coming out soon. It's about the Alabama protests in the 60s with Martin Luther King. And I remember sitting there in this theater, and if there's no there's no black-white racial tension here. It's just very friendly. And I mean, I hesitate to say there's no racial overtones whatsoever, but it's just not like any U.S. city. Anyways, just sitting in this theater and watching this and watching this preview of something that supposedly happened so very, very long ago, and that it's all, you know, old news, all these protests of, you know, police brutality against these, you know, people that just want civil rights. And this is happening, you know, now. It's really sad. But it's at the same time, I think the news cycle is just catching up so quickly that
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We know we've got so much more information about stuff that clearly has been going on for ages.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So astrologically, we're going to put that out to the Uranus square Pluto.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
And the only other big thing that happened was in 2014 was Saturn went into Sagittarius.
Exactly, right at the end, yeah. Yeah, December 23rd.
So that's kind of still new. We're still trying that one for size, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we will have it retrograding into Scorpio for a bit.
Yeah.
Again, in 2015. But
they say it's like they've left school, but then it's got to go back and unpack its locker.
Yeah.
Because there's still some stuff lying about that needs attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturn's plunging forward into Sagittarius.
Yeah.
For a couple of years. I think it's nearly 3 years. It's quite a long time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that will definitely be refreshing, I think.
Yes. Refreshing, that's a word.
Nothing against Scorpio. I know and love Scorpio, but Saturn in Scorpio is a bit, wow, it's a bit thick.
It was.
Yeah. So that is that's what's happened the last year. Mm. And gosh, I don't know if there's anything else that was horrible that we need to address, but you know, that's plenty. I mean, really.
Maybe we can find something that's good news, even.
Oh, yeah. Well, we landed a little, you know, spacecraft on a comet.
We did. We did. And this is the year they took that photo through Saturn's rings back at Earth.
The whole family. That's amazing. I love what they do with that astronomy these days. And we have U.S. reestablishing diplomatic relations with Cuba, which is huge, the first time since the Kennedy administration that that's happened.
Yes.
And who knows what that will bring, but it seems like a very overdue, sort of sensible thing to do.
Okay.
You know? I mean, it's just kind of absurd. We in Canada, and obviously anywhere that you've lived, we can visit Cuba. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. You know,
I haven't, but we could. But yeah, they...
Kind of strange.
Not allowed to. So that's another interesting thing that's a bit of a... sort of equalizing thing, that one of those Uranus Pluto unjust sort of overreaction that's being corrected, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And that's another good side effect of the Uranus Pluto ongoing thing. So 2015. Yeah. Mm. Well, we don't have any major planetary ingresses. That is one thing that's an interesting lack of thing.
So we're going to start the year off with the planets where they're going to end the year off. That's what we're saying, right?
Except for, you know, everything from Mars in obviously changes, but...
on Jupiter.
No major planets, Uranus and Pluto will remain within 1 degree all the way through January.
Yes.
So that is still definitely going to be affecting the world. January also sees Mars squaring Saturn and conjuncting Neptune.
Okay.
So that's on the 14th that it squares Saturn, and on the 19th that it conjuncts Neptune. So it's going to be a tense, sort of charged month, I think. I'm predicting that.
Okay.
For January. Yeah. Then in March, we have the last of the Uranus-Pluto squares. The last.
Yes.
Until almost in November. And also in March, we have solar eclipse.
Yes, we do.
At 29 degrees Pisces.
Our first solar eclipse,
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Solar eclipses, new beginnings, if you want to start something, start it then.
Yeah.
Not before.
Yeah.
In Pisces. 27 Pisces.
Right.
Difficult degree because that's the last degree of the zodiac.
Basically, it's conjunct the Aries point.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of really, it's going to affect Pisces people more. Anyone who's got anything at 29 Pisces. But
But
so it's really
only 5 days after
things.
That. Yeah, it's going to be definitely adding to that whole cluster of stuff.
So that's kind of interesting because that's going to be in Pisces if you have planets in Pisces.
I have nothing in Pisces.
I have nothing in Pisces.
And then April 4th, full moon lunar eclipse.
Yes.
And 14 Libra.
Nice bang in the middle of Libra.
Yep.
Nice balance there for the Librans.
Oh, yeah.
So this is going to affect the middle of the road Librans, that middle period of time.
Yeah, or people that have a whole lot of stuff in Libra, like myself.
Yes. You do?
Oh, yeah, just, you know, outer planets mostly. Venus, Pluto, Uranus.
Anything near 14-ish? Sorry, I didn't mean to put you off.
Oh, but Venus is at 11.
They're all so bigger. I think with eclipses, you need to be like 1 degree, 1.5 degrees tops away from the conjunction. But so that's 14 Libra. So anyone who's got planets there is going to be, feel the effect of that eclipse.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it more when we get to it.
Yeah, definitely. And then we have a bit of a break, unless you have anything written down. I just got basically next September is the solar eclipse at 20 Virgo.
Yes. Yeah. And again, if you've got anything at 20 Virgo.
No, ish. I don't.
No.
Probably earlier. But
the Virgos of this world, we're going to get it. Yeah. And it's just going to echo that Pisces we had earlier on in the year.
Yeah.
So that's the solar eclipse as well.
Yeah. And then we've got Mars square Saturn again on the 25th of September. And then we've got another lunar eclipse, but I don't have that one written down.
September the 28th at 4 degrees Aries.
There you go.
So that one's now come from the 29 Pisces into the Aries. It's funny because the nodes actually go backwards. So the Pisces is the news bit. We've been having Aries ones and now we're starting to have Pisces eclipses. So that's okay. Anyway.
Cool.
And because the nodal axis is shifting from the Libra Aries into Virgo Pisces, from now on and during this year and the next, the Virgo Pisces of this world will get those eclipses in their signs, tapping away at their planets as the eclipse moves back and forth.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got quite a bit in Virgo.
Oh, yeah. Three planets, definitely.
So we'll be talking more about how these eclipses are going to be affecting your chart as they develop over the next couple of years.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little slice of life. Here's what it's like in the trenches, kind of.
Exactly. Our reporter.
Eclipse. Reporting from the eclipse
that's right.
Event horizon.
Right. I mean, look, I've got three planets in Virgo as well, but not at this particular degree. Maybe I'll be lucky in 2016. Yeah. I don't know.
Woohoo, eclipse hit. Drink it.
Yes. Yeah. And how each eclipse affects each person will depend on the actual eclipse, and we can talk about it more in the month it comes up, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
Indeed. And then, of course, the November near miss is happening at around the 26th, 27th.
Okay.
And that also is coinciding with the Mars square Saturn. So, yeah.
Okay, so we also have that Jupiter's going to be going into Virgo.
What?
Yeah, in September.
Did I miss that completely? I was like, no ingress.
I just thought I'd mention it.
Well, that's an outer planet, I think.
Yes. Well, anyway, so August 12th moves into Virgo.
Well, I completely missed that one. But I'll tell you why later. When we do our book reviews, I'll tell you why I missed that one.
So what it means is that up until August, we've got three outer planets in fire.
Yeah.
So this is kind of huge.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Uranus in Aries, Saturn in Sagittarius, and Jupiter in Leo.
Yeah. Yeah, huge. Lots of fire.
Yeah, so lots of inspiration. And they won't actually make a grand trine because that's kind of, they're not quite in sync with that. And Jupiter's moved a bit far. But it's making a shift on the elements.
It definitely changes the tone of things from the sort of this thick emotionality of Saturn and Scorpio that we've had.
Yes.
And I think it's...
So it suits fire signs. So it actually suits me down to the ground. But this is going to be there because we can work with that. But it means you've got this... If you are a fire sign, Aries, Leo or Sag, you're going to get outer planets triggering your chart as well.
Yeah.
So there you're going to get a different kind of... triggering going on.
That's true, yeah, definitely. And it won't just be the fiery, inspiring kind because it may be Uranus transit or...
Exactly, right. So if you've got Uranus on something in your Aries or whatever you have in your chart...
Yeah, exactly. I don't have anything in Aries except Chiron, which we don't really discuss that much. I mean, we think it's real, obviously. We like Chiron, it's fine. Neither of us are, that...
Sagittarius, you've got nothing doing?
Just Neptune.
Oh.
Just so Neptune, there we are. Just little Neptune.
So your generation is going to get that Neptune triggered through there as that comes through.
Yeah.
You'll get a Saturn conjunct Neptune cropping up then shortly.
Yeah.
Next couple of years.
I'm trying to remember if I've had anything... Because, I mean, the Saturn-Neptune opposition that happened in 2005, 6, 7, that was enormous. But that wasn't a personal aspect. It was...
Right.
I did a bunch of research on that. But I can't think of any aspects any transits I've had like that in the past. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what that does.
So there's lots to be
exciting
in the diary ahead, because we do have our diaries, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you do. I'm still scratching for mine. I'm trying to go electronic and I'm resisting the paper, but I may have to cave.
Yeah.
But anyway. So date for your diary, there's quite a bit coming up, little changes. And each of the different combinations of what we're talking about are affecting different type of signs, like the eclipses are going to go Virgo Pisces and the fire signs have triggered this and that. So maybe you're going to get something that's connected to your chart, or maybe you're actually going to get a near miss altogether this year. So yeah. It just shows that not all the signs get all stimulated each year.
Exactly. And when Jupiter goes into Virgo, obviously, that'll hit all three of my things really rapidly.
You'll be like reeling, and you will have blow by blow account of.
Yeah. Although, I mean, Jupiter transiting the Sun, Mercury, Moon, it's not big dramatic sort of aspects, really.
Yes.
Generally speaking, we don't expect.
We expect it. Well, I mean, I've still got it banging over my sun at the moment, so yeah. I'm with a three-hit wonder.
Yeah.
But opportunities are coming, but you just think, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Because you're looking one way in life, you know, and you think, well, if someone just, you know, I would do this, and this.
Right.
And then you're getting blindsided with, here's an opportunity coming. You think, what?
That's what they always say about Jupiter, too. It'll be, you know, great if you can take advantage of it.
Yes.
So...
Exactly.
It's not going to hit you over the head.
Like someone will say, would you like to come away for a writer's weekend conference, and it's going to be north of Toronto, and it's on the such and such a date. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, it'd be great if I could get there, right? Or whatever. So opportunities are maybe there that cannot be taken all the time with Jupiter, I think. But still, we get the opportunity.
Yeah, good call. Definitely.
Anyway.
Well, and we've got retrogrades of Mercury, as always. We have three every year. So that'll be happening January 21st through February 11th. And May 18th through June 11th, and then September 17th through October 9th. So.
Yes. So interestingly, this in 2015, all the Mercury retrogrades are in the air signs.
Interesting.
Because it patterns through three times, and which is totally the opposite to the fire signs. So if you bring that into the mix of the outers, there will constantly be the kite coming from Mercury to the three, and then you've got this triangle, and then it's Mercury retrogrades here, and then here, and also always in the gap. Creating, so we're expecting to see a lot of kite patterns this year.
And give us a little bit of a definition of a kite pattern.
Well, it's really when you've got three planets trining each other, and then you've got one opposing one of them.
Okay. Oh, so
because we've got so because we've got these three, even though they're not trining a grand trine, they're in fire, they're stimulating fire, and then Mercury retrogrades in air over here, which is between and opposes the one. Then Mercury trots along and then opposes the next one from air.
Yeah.
And then comes around and opposes the next one from air. So it's fully engaged in these outer planets being in air.
Yeah. Huh.
Hmm.
So it's like inspiration but intellectual challenge sort of?
Yeah, it's going to be news.
Yeah.
And you may just, it's got to be information overload, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because at the moment I'm...
And we were talking Jupiter, Uranus and Saturn.
Yes.
These are the biggest planets in the solar system.
Exactly. So if they do connect to your chart, it's going to be in a big way. It's not just a passing thing.
Yeah.
And they'll linger there too. And I think that because Mercury's in air, it's going to be absolute information and too much in your inbox and all of these kind of problems. And I don't know if cell phones are just going to go down another direction or it's going to turn into some other thing.
You're tapping your wrist. I've seen something. I was... I had my head over the boyfriend's shoulder recently, and he's much more of a gadget fanatic than I am. I have my one laptop, which I love, and a couple of iPods, and I'm
done. But it's coming. I've seen people in the street now with these Google glasses. And
right,
like,
right.
Really?
There were these weird things that looked like a square little guy on a watch.
That's your phone.
Like, what? I remember when I was in school, like in elementary school, I imagined that I had invented in my head this little watch TV thing, so you could watch... you know, television on your watch during the day, during class is what I had in mind, but, you know, whatever. So now it's been, God, you know, whatever amount
of
years.
You were a visionary, you see.
How they have it. Yep.
So I think things are going to be changing, and we're going to, because of the way it's patterning against those fire signs, we're not going to just absorb it and take it on. There's going to be, hang on a minute, because Mercury's retrograding in all three of them.
Yeah.
And we're going to say, do I need this? Why am I doing that? But we're still going to go out and buy them.
Yeah.
Because that's how it's evolving.
Yeah.
It's kind of different because recently Mercury was retrograding in the Earth signs, so there was a different mood to things then.
Right? Yeah.
But now it's all...
Yeah, in the Earth signs, it's a lot more like, wait, hold on. Let me assimilate this.
Yes.
I like Mercury retrograde in the Earth signs. I don't have Mercury retrograde in my chart, but with all the Virgo, And of course, my Mars in Taurus. I really do like the whole, just stop, hold on, let me think about this. Let me just absorb it. And then I run ahead. Or run away, one or the other.
Can I talk a little bit about, we've got Venus retrograde as well coming up.
Hmm.
This will be from July to September. I've got the dates here, but we don't need to split hairs. And that's going to go from Virgo back to Leo. So it's going to affect both Leo and Virgo. And it's Venus. That's the last 2 weeks of July. We'll have that with Venus. And of course, Mars is direct all year.
Mm.
So it's just one of those years where Mars just constantly just moves forward and whips around.
Yeah.
Which is good. And then we've got Jupiter retrograde in Leo. You see, January 1 to April, and Saturn retrograde. Sagittarius going back to Scorpio.
Yeah.
So that's the one this year, but I think next year it will just do the retrograde solely in Sagittarius.
Yeah.
And then we've got Uranus retrograde in Aries, of course, July, December. So they're long periods of lingering.
Yeah.
Neptune in Pisces, Pluto in Capricorn, but that's kind of old news already.
Yeah, they won't be retrograding into previous signs or anything.
So all the planets retrograde except the Sun and the Moon and Mars this year, so that's fine. And some years Venus doesn't retrograde because it takes so long for each period to come.
Yeah.
But so lots of astrology comings and goings and stations and this and that for us to develop in great detail.
Yeah. A bit more of a positive outlook, though, for this coming year.
I think so.
Yeah. And it's nice to see that we'll actually be, I think, assimilating, society will be assimilating some of what it's learned over the last few years with the Uranus-Pluto square, but people individually may still be assimilating it quite far into the future as far as the information and what it means for them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to say what's going to happen, but the pattern is that change is still occurring for us, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, what else is there to say about the new year?
Something that I always do when I'm setting up to plan ahead for the year, because as an astrologer, you need to have all your eclipses in hand and know when's this and that is. I always looking for good days to get married, because people always come and say, when's a good day and when's not a good day? And at this point, because we're just doing a broad stroke, I've just got a few dates which are the best days if you're going to get married.
Excellent.
So my first section is going to be from June 20 to July 14. Those are excellent days. So it's quite nice for the summer there.
Yeah.
And my second excellent time is actually December 27th to December 31.
Really?
And that's rather slim, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit of a busy time.
That's right. So the best times to actually tie the knot, even if you're getting married on any day of the week, you want to get married afternoon, but about 1 or 2 hours before sunset. So it doesn't really matter which month or which week you get married, but more the time of the day would matter. So you've got the sun placed well, you want it in 7th or 8th house. So that's always in the afternoon and always before sunset, or 1 hour or 2 hours before sunset, no matter what the day it is.
Well, that makes perfect sense. That sounds
great. So if you're planning a wedding, I don't know if you know anyone who is.
No.
I mean, I certainly don't. But
not at all.
They keep coming up. And also, these are good times if you want to renew your vows, which is a practice that people do, and I'm not quite sure why.
I've done that, actually.
Have you?
In my past marriage, I was married for 6 years, and we did actually renew once.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Dan Savage, famous columnist from Savage Love and from Seattle, was marrying people at the Crocodile Cafe, which we lived across from. So that was a temptation we couldn't pass up.
What is this, Las Vegas or something you're talking about?
Seattle in the 90s, woo! And that's all I have to say about that.
So anyhow, there you go.
Renewing the vows.
People do this sort of thing. And if you are going to do it again, you want to do it afternoon, about 2 hours before sunset, no matter what the day is, that's when you make the commitment or the reaffirmation of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that is always a good time to get married. If you get married in the morning, you've got the sun in the wrong houses.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different thing. But I do have a caveat on that, because if you're seeking a power union, if you're trying to marry someone to take yourself both up socially or financially, or you're marrying above your station, as we used to say in the old days, then you really want to get married between 10:30 and noon, because you want the sun then in the 10th house.
Interesting.
So then when the two of you come together in the marriage chart, the sun's in the 10th house, and it gives it most elevated status, and it creates that the world will know you as Tom and...
I wonder what time of day the Clintons were married.
Well, exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
So it depends what your culture says about getting married and this and that. And it has to be the actual, the civil union. So if you are one of those religions where you have to get married in the court first and then have a celebration, it's the court one we're talking about.
Interesting. Oh my gosh.
So if you want to be the A couple, the power couple, you're coming, you're like, you're bringing the, what was it, the something and the Capulets, I can't remember.
Oh, the Montagues. Montagues and Capulets, yeah.
You're bringing.
So you don't want your marriage like that.
You're bringing two dynasties together. Yes. Or you're trying to build something, or you're marrying into your whatever.
Right.
And do it between 10:30 and noon. Yeah. That's your best time.
Yes. Or else a plague on both their houses.
So because then the marriage will have a child of its own.
Yeah.
We can talk about this sometime.
Oh, totally. That's fascinating.
In the course of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know how readily available marriage charts are online, but we could find some examples
to look
at.
Everyone knows when they got married, you see. We might not always know when we got
Well, what time, born. Though? What time? That would be...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So, what am I saying? And the times not to marry, if I can just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be between... There's a couple of them. Between March 6 and March 13, don't get married.
Yeah. Okay.
And between June 4 to June 11, not getting married. And there's a bit of a stretch here, July 19th to September 7th. You don't want to get married either.
That's a big stretch. That's almost a whole summer.
A bit of a long haul. You want the planets moving direct as they go into your progress chart. Yeah. So that's kind of where those dates come from. Of course, you can get married during these times, but the stars create more challenges in the marriage than normal.
Yeah.
And you never, ever want to get married when Venus is retrograde or something like that.
Yeah. Give yourself a fighting chance.
You're going to need it.
Yeah.
To survive, as you know, these things, they're sent to try us. So if you want to go back and look at marriage charts, or when you, if any of our listeners were married before, or you or someone, you know when you got married, you can pull out the chart and see how the planets were placed. And it'll show you so much about how the marriage developed.
Yeah, interesting. I'm eager to find out more about that.
So it's kind of strange, because even people like your parents, if they've been married for 30, 40 years, they still remember when they got married and you know, typically the sun is at the top because it was during the day. You don't get married at night, so you never have this kind of sun placement. Yeah. But depending where it is placed, it shows, you know, what your marriage is likely to be like.
Interesting. And it's not the same every year, obviously, like with the times of day or...
The times of day, because you want the sun in 7 or 8, so 1 or 2 hours before sunset is always a good time.
Right.
Because if you can get the marriage chart sun in the 7th house, it will support the marriage.
Yeah.
And if it's in the 8th house, it will support the good, the bad, and the ugly of marriage.
Yeah.
And if it's in the 10th, that's fine.
That's
so,
the power couple placement. Yeah.
It's
but the weeks of the year, that's just specific to 2015.
Yes,
that's not like every year you should avoid that. Yeah.
No, not at all. And if you've already booked your wedding for them, then I'm sorry about that. But anyway.
Yeah. Best of luck to you.
We'll be cheering you on.
Yes, definitely.
And I think in 2015, we need to do a wedding session. Or maybe in the spring, we'll do one of those.
Totally, that would be really interesting. Yeah.
Not that I'm going to be talking about my child. But you see, because we got married in Africa, there they used to get married in the morning and then have the party in the afternoon and out in the sun and by the pool, right?
Well, yeah, I guess.
So we were actually married at 11 o'clock in the morning, so we've actually got that 10th house.
Nice. Very good.
I know.
Power couple.
Hardly, but it seems the impression is there, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's, I guess, the one thing about not getting married, that you don't get to do all that.
That's right.
But, you know, we do have the 17 years to look back.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's fine.
So that's just one of those things that astrology is really good at, and picking dates for weddings is absolutely one of them.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Have you done that in the past?
No, I have not done that at all, but it's fascinating. Obviously, people are just...
I mean,
they get so stressed
day,
out about weddings, and people just obsess over every little thing. And if you can, you know, bring some math into it and bring in some, like, millennia-old science to kind of...
That's right.
Make it a bit easier, or put your mind at ease that you're doing it the right way and then doing it on the right, you know, angles and whatnot. I think that that's a great thing.
You wonder if these things shouldn't actually be in a wedding planner's like book of list of things to
really
do. Really?
Going, oh, no,
video
Venus
astrologer.
Yeah.
And yet, do people want to be married forever? I'm not sure if they do. Ugh. I've always thought that it would be a good idea to get a marriage license for 7 years. And after that, you can either renew or let it just go away, and then you're no longer married.
And where's your Saturn again? Because that is so...
Capricorn.
Okay. They're very... Yeah.
And I've always thought that that would be a way to, you know, overcome. Clearly, many people get divorced. I know that.
Yeah. It's funny. Every once in a while, they'll bring up they. In the news, you'll hear so-and-so, whatever state or place, is trying to make it more difficult to get married and or more difficult to get divorced. I don't know. I mean, I guess that the government does have a great deal of it, you know, whatever invested in people being married and having children and whatnot. And that's kind of creepy to me. I mean, I find it that is, really right? repugnant that there's like, they want you to get married and have children. Like, ugh. Really, like, but go away. It's none of your business, you know. But yeah, it's bizarre. Like to me, I don't know. I just figure people get married, people get divorced. It's not a big deal. Yeah, exactly. I mean, sad for them if they didn't want to get divorced. Knows. That's upsetting. But it's
like your birth chart. You're born at a certain time, whether you like it or not. You've got that birth chart. You have to live with it, and your life will develop in line with the chart, and so will your marriage. Yeah. So.
I mean, I'm one of those people who certainly every relationship that I've had, I wanted it to last forever. I've never been in a relationship that I just thought, oh, this will be great for the summer. I'm not that kind of person. And I know some people are, but fewer than you'd think. I mean, for how fluid relationships can be, I think most of the time when people enter into a relationship that they call a relationship, they think it's going to last. I think.
Otherwise, why bother doing the whole thing?
Yeah.
And yet it's huge. Huge business.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
bridals.
Oh, yeah. That whole thing is crazy.
The whole thing. What are they saying? It's like $35,000 now to have a decent wedding or something. And
it's ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. Because,
I die because I've got three daughters. Yeah. But, anyway, that's just one of those things that astrology is pretty good at. And if you're throwing money around a wedding, you can certainly throw...
I just want to do a little research and make sure that you're doing it.
Yes. And really, to anyone who's thinking about getting married next year, start thinking about 2016 already and consult your astrologer now. So pick your... Because we know what the good dates are already.
Yeah.
For 2016, 17, if those are your dates. And listen to me.
That's true.
Yeah. So actually, just because we're still talking about 2015 and where we're going and this and that, I've actually written some yearly forecasts for all the... signs, which is on my website, and I can put
a link back over.
And there's like a 2015 overview because it's a broad stroke. Because I also do the monthly horoscopes, although not for January because I'm too busy doing this one.
Yeah.
But for signs who want to just definitely put a link, and I've got to get on there and get it sorted. And we can just put that up because,
So go check that out on Starsology.
Yes. Yeah. So do that. And I'd love to hear from you about anything that cropped up before.
Definitely. Any questions after you've read your review and you think, well, she didn't talk about this one aspect of my life that I desperately need to know about. Well, you can contact Alison.
So it's just because it's the new year. There's no real reason to do it now and not at other times, but we do it for each year because the new year clocks round.
Yeah, exactly. Well, people make New Year's resolutions and they do their whole...
I know, right? And they add it up and they say, well, 2015 is going to be a 5, 6, 7, 8 year. So that means I don't even... Not much into numerology in that way.
No, me neither. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Well, that's how we see 2015, I think, Arwen.
I think so. Which brings me to my book review. Now, normally, we have a guideline that generally the two of us have just sort of agreed. We will only review books that we like and we recommend. But
today, it's different.
But today, and I wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for the fact that the same publishing company also puts out a very useful and well-done version of the same, pretty much the same thing.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. So... I'm reviewing today Llewellyn's 2015 Astrological Pocket Planner, not to be confused with the Llewellyn's Daily Planetary Guide. The Planetary Guide I recommend highly.
That's getting thumbs up.
It's only a couple dollars more, but you get quite a bit more for your investment of time and money and whatnot, and having to read tiny little type and whatnot.
Okay, so...
So my critique of this little pocket planner... mostly centers around the fact that the daily calendar part of it doesn't have any aspects listed. No, if you want to look at the aspects, you have to go flipping down to the back of the book where you've got 2014, 2015, and 2016 all together. So you have to flip through all these pages that look identical.
So that's what you've written in there?
Mm,
I thought those were your aspects.
No. All the things I've written by hand into the calendar section are actually the aspects that are happening on those days that you have to flip to the back
and
of the goddamn thing to find.
The back because it's more pockety or...?
I don't know. I mean, my personal opinion of pockety is convenience.
Yes.
I don't care that it's small enough to fit into a pocket. Really.
Right.
I leave it on the
You'd
table
prefer to
at
have
home.
The aspects on the day yeah. as you open it right in front of you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I would. Okay. I really would. And flipping to the back to look at these tables, really the tables are half ephemeris and the other half is daily list of aspects. And it's just...
You could have just put an ephemeris in your back pocket then.
Yeah. And it's just the teeniest little type, which is, of course, you know, it has to be. But it's not in a place where it's convenient at all. And then they have these little daily planting and fishing symbols. Which
fishing?
Fishing. Do you know what
fishing
is? I don't fish. And I know some people must because they publish this.
Life.
No, neither have I. I mean, I think I was taken on a camping trip once when I was too young to complain. And I didn't actually fish or catch any fish, but people around me were catching fish.
So let's get this clear. They're telling you which is a good day to go fishing.
Yeah.
And do they mean just fish in general or general hunting?
Good question. Okay. It just says, plant a garden, go fishing.
Is that a euphemism for...
I do not know. I hope so. I really hope Gone it's a euphemism. If only I could believe that it was a euphemism. No, it's choosing ideal times to plant a garden, begin new projects, go fishing, and more. But there is no and more. It's a little symbol of a fish, and it's a little symbol of a leaf. I believe there are people who fish. No offense to any of our listeners who fish. But I do not believe that the Venn diagram that includes astrologers in one circle and fishers in the other circle, I do not believe that the overlap is that great to justify this. That is my belief.
Do we think that the author is a fisherman himself and therefore this kind of information was critical?
That might explain something.
Or is it an overflow from like the almanac where we know they're going to tell you when to fish?
Possibly.
And when to plant root vegetables and when to plant top vegetables.
Very probably, yeah.
And when to shore sheep or shear sheep,
yeah.
I mean.
I'm surprised that they didn't have that in there. The shearing days.
That's bad luck, isn't it? That just wasn't in there. Well, and do you have anything else you'd like to comment about it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. She's on a roll.
I am. Okay, so it's 5x8, which is fine. Well, actually, no, wait. It's not 5x8.
That's not 5x8.
The other one's 5x8. This is 4x6. So 4x6, 5x8, it's not that much bigger. I mean, sure, you could fit it in your pocket. You're not going to carry it around in your pocket. No one is.
It's the same thickness.
Yes, it's the same exact thickness. Then you have a spiral on the larger one, which is the planetary guide, so you can actually open it. And then on the pocket planner, you can't really open it. You can pry it open and then...
You're going to have to crack the spine to open it.
Yeah, exactly, which Virgos don't do. So that's a problem already. And it's not quite thick enough that the spine will crack easily. It will be a disaster. The aspects are really the main problem. The lack of aspects on the daily calendar section.
And is there interpretations in there at all?
No.
Like you get in the planetary guide.
No, in the planetary guide, you get an entire thing of every week of the year, and they have this whole paragraph on it, which honestly, I don't really read as much as I could.
But it's handy.
You can. I've
been taking the planetary guide.
Yeah.
For years and years and years. And yeah. I recommend it on my website.
Yes. And I bought
and
it
I
last
recommend
year
it to
you.
All my students. Yeah, yeah. To all my students as a way to get in touch with where's the moon, what's happening.
Yeah.
If you're a beginner in astrology, you can read moon in Aries and know it means something.
Yep, exactly. And you can see all the aspects listed there on each day. And you can go, oh, today's
exactly.
Wow. Lots
increases.
Of aspects
This
today.
Is where we get...
It's very useful. Yeah.
And you're telling me that's not in the pocket guide.
I'm telling you that, yeah.
And yeah, that's the main thing we use the planetary guide for.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That is exactly what I'm saying. It's, yeah.
So are you saying you'd like to have the planetary guide, but just smaller?
It's not even smaller. You know, the reason I bought this, I didn't buy it for any of the reasons that you'd think. The reason I bought this is because when I ordered it, I was ordering on Chapters, which I'm happy to say I was ordering something from Chapters and not Amazon, because I'm a little down on Amazon lately just because of whatever and stuff and politics. And anyways, So Chapters didn't have the planetary guide at the time I was ordering it, and I was ordering it online and had a gift card, and the purchase had to happen that day. Okay, so this is my point. And they had the pocket planner, but not the guide. So I was like, oh, how different could it be?
Why would they not have it? You wonder why would they not have it?
It was sometime in the summer, I think. So maybe they just didn't have it yet.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So what are we saying? What was the name of this?
Llewellyn's. And if they're listening, my God, I'm sorry. But anyway. But really, fix this. Fix it. The planner is not helpful. Got problems.
So.
But the guide, I recommend the planetary guide wholeheartedly.
Yes, well, yeah. I have undo.
And you could probably fit it into a pocket book,
a
purse, a bag, a briefcase, any sort of thing.
And you know what would be even handier than either of those two is if they had the planetary guide that you could download into your iPhone.
Well,
so
do they not?
No, then it would go straight into your calendar without me having to dig about for these things.
Where's the app? My God.
Oh, no.
Well.
That's your book review.
Yeah.
Okay, so is this a sign of things to come for 2015?
Well, sadly, yeah. I am now saddled with it. I could go out and buy the guide, but then I would feel like I had been defeated. Yeah. Every time you see me in 2015, I will be prying this thing open and...
Are you going to put the images on the site so we can see?
I've got a screenshot, yes. I've got an angry little screenshot with circled fish and planting symbols, etc. So everyone can appreciate what exactly I am complaining about. We recommend the guide, the planetary guide.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Hope this too. Do you have a book to review?
I do, actually. I do. Totally got nothing to do with anything in particular.
Yeah.
This book is called Zodiac Manager, an astrological expose of everyone in the office. And it's written by a guy, called J.T. Ford. I've had this for years. I have to tell you straight off the bat, it's a beginner's book. It's about how to get on with the people you work with through astrology.
Cool.
And it's written for you if you are the boss and you've got minions below you.
Yeah. What's it say about the Virgo minion? Being so selfish.
I will have to just flick to the Virgo, yes.
That basically just said, hey, bosses, this is what I'm like. No, let's not say that. But tell me.
The motto is the power behind the throne.
Mm.
So we've got a little bit about introduction to Virgo, Virgo energy profile, deliberate, very thorough individual who works on restless, nervous energy.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly active. Virgo is always busy, always doing, and rarely exists in a relaxed state.
Yep.
This is an efficient individual wasting no energy in getting a specific job done. This is by no means overwhelming energy, nor is it spontaneous, but a body of continuous steady motion that is strictly task-oriented.
Keep us busy or we will do other tasks at work.
So you're like a shark. You have to keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then there's the Virgo intelligence profile, how Virgo communicates, how you manage money, and so on. And it's about working with and managing people who, if you know their signs, this is only on sun sign, who's loyal, what their work habits is, who's cutting corners, who's coming in late, and...
Leo.
Yes. Shut up. Virgo's most profitable location, let's listen to this.
Okay.
This sun sign should be placed in a structured workspace near his boss.
In an office with a door.
I think so.
Yeah.
Right away you knew what that meant, didn't you? And I'm thinking, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Virgo will immediately recognize it and forever keep it neat and tidy.
Yep.
Expect a clean desk at night. Virgo expects his office or those around him to be organized with everyone, respectful of everyone else's work habits.
Yep.
Because Virgo is a workaholic, his office is run like an operating room. Efficient and all business. Virgo will not tolerate interruptions and unkempt surroundings.
Yeah.
He prefers a company with tradition located in a city.
Yeah, so we can have a view. We don't like to say that's why we like it, but we do. Because that sounds too fruity and flowery to us. It sounds like, you know, that's you know, nothing, but it's important. It is.
And then it's got some Virgo job-relating skills rating.
Ooh.
I'm just going to pick out the good ones, the excellent skills, learning and thinking skills, work attitude, decision-making, money management.
Attitude depends, but yep.
Planning, details, I think we all know this, punctuality and efficiency.
Can be.
I don't know about punctuality, but okay.
I work from home now, so it's not a problem. But
self-management and initiative, and you've got all those. They are the Virgo strengths, right?
Yeah.
Whereas something poor is visionary.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to count on your Virgo to start your, you know, your five-year plan.
Yes, and flexibility, I'm afraid. I don't know why that's in as poor. But anyway.
Oh, we're a mutable sign, but we're not a flexible sign. Not at all.
So a little bit about Virgo's working relationships.
Excellent.
You can work profitably with Aries, Taurus, Scorpio, and Capricorn.
Aries? Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Actually, I do have an Aries boss right now, and she's wonderful.
Non-profitable connections are Virgo, Cancer, and Libra.
Really?
And risky.
Ah.
Of course, Gemini, Leo, Sagittarius, Aquarius, and Pisces.
Right, yeah.
So who to work with, you know?
I would have to disagree on the Libra and Cancer, but I would agree on the last category there.
Yes, yeah.
Although, I don't know, Libra is It's weird. I was just going to say, it's an even split. But yeah, of course it would be.
That so was, talking about making money with people, with pairing with these. So they're saying non-profitable with Virgo, Cancer and Libra. So maybe you're not going to make money there.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good, good
it's time. Who you should get together with, right?
Yeah.
And
what a great book that is.
How a Virgo works with Leo. Where is it? It's not even listed, you see.
What?
That's scary. Anyway, here we go.
Yeah.
Leo will have a solid, detailed, oriented perfectionist working with him. All these day-to-day problems Leo doesn't want to deal with, Virgo is pleased to tackle. Such as updating the website.
And the whiteboard.
And the whiteboard. Oh, we must put a picture of the whiteboard on.
Yeah.
But the easygoing Leo is going to have trouble with the overbearing and precise Virgo. And Virgo is going to have problems respecting a boss who relishes in showmanship tactics. The duo needs constant monitoring and compromise to be as profitable as we know it can be. The money involved makes it worth the effort.
Mm.
So you have. Anyway, and it takes all the signs, and this is, I want to say it's lightweight. It's certainly not complex astrology. And anyone can pick this book up and read it and say, I'm a manager. I've got three people working for me. Who should I pair together? Yeah. Who should I work on their own? And you get much more efficient.
Would you recommend taking that to an office party?
Oh, yes.
And going through it with your coworkers.
It to the boss.
That might be fun in addition to the party, I would think.
This is, I mean, the last time I got a job, the first day I was there, a woman said to me, I'm a Taurus. She says, when's your birthday?
And this is apropos of nothing. This is, you didn't mention anything?
I never mentioned astrology
how
first.
How exciting.
And I thought, here we go. And I said, you know, August 11th. Oh, she says, you're a Leo. That's good because I get on with Leo. So I thought, well, what else were you going to say?
Right. Yeah, exactly. No kidding. Actually, this is sort of funny. I was going to talk about this before and I forgot. But our producer and I were at a Christmas party recently, and we got to chatting with the new boyfriend of a former coworker of mine. And we started talking about what you do, et cetera, et cetera. And we were talking about the podcast.
But did you tell them we podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because he kind of, this boyfriend, I don't know what he does for a living. I think we did most of the talking. This is a terrible story already. No, but anyway, he seemed like, you know, he was being polite, but he definitely seemed like he could have been super skeptical, but was being polite and was giving us the benefit of the doubt. But instead, it sort of ranged into this really interesting conversation where we were all agreeing that the sort of acceptance of astrology in various circles is definitely gaining traction, and especially with China and India being such enormous demographics and both having a huge tradition in astrology, and with the stock market and financial astrology, definitely that's on the rise. And so it ended up being a really interesting conversation with a couple of people who I never would have thought would have a conversation about astrology in such an even-handed and sort of open-minded way.
Mm-hmm. Because when I'm out there in the general public or meeting someone for the first time, I never ever mention astrology.
No, not do I.
I never do. But if someone brings up the subject, I will go as far as they will go. But I even then, I did not say I do astrology.
No.
I just said I knew what the question was and I just went with it, right?
I might try to find out what sign they are secretively, but
yes. And over time, that was the day one. I'd been there like 2 hours, and that was the first question she gave to me. I'm a Taurus. When's your birthday?
That's
gosh, you know.
Yeah, neat. I like that.
I don't want to say any more.
No, that's very. That's really. Yeah.
That's Zodiac Manager by J.T. Ford. It's a pretty old book. I don't know if you can still get it. Probably pick it up on eBay. It's quite a good book.
Fine. Excellent. We will link to.
Yes.
Even if it's not for sale, we'll link to
we'll link to it. Why not?
Yeah.
I don't know who he is or if it was even a man, but I want to assume. Good.
Yeah. Excellent. Pretty good book review. Well, that is our year in review preview, the year ahead.
2015, yes.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Exactly. Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toes. I'm Arun O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thank you for joining us.
I'll see you next time.
Yeah.